This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
IFL TV, you already know I'm delighted, as always, to be joined by Mr. Dan Raphael. Dan, we spoke a little bit before I pushed record there, but I will ask again, how's things?
Oh, things are good. I'm glad that you had a good trip to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it was a very, very enjoyable trip. And like I said to you, it's an experience that I very much enjoyed. I think the way they're doing it is... yeah, it's just totally different from the UK sort of aspect of things in the US, the way they run the press conferences and weigh-ins and whatnot. But yeah, it's definitely one I'm going to get used to. I had a nightmare coming home with my connecting flight, nearly missed it. So it's just been an absolutely crazy, crazy week, but enjoyed every second of it.
I'm glad to hear that.
Well, let's talk about it then, Dan. Let's talk straight into it. Anthony Joshua knocks out Francis Ngannou in the second round, dropped him twice prior to the knockout. I'll ask this question. Did you expect that to be that easy, in quotation marks, for Joshua?
No, I didn't. I didn't expect it to be that easy, as you said, quote unquote, because it's never easy. He just made it look easy. I think it was reasonable to anticipate that based on the way that Ngannou had performed against Fury, even if you take into account the fact that it was very clear that Fury was not in optimal condition for the fight, that because he got so much trouble from Francis, that he would give Joshua maybe not trouble, but he'd be able to hang in there for a little while and, maybe have a moment or two. But that wasn't the case. Anthony Joshua was tunnel vision, focused, well-schooled, hungry, and had the benefit of the 10 rounds of video that he could watch or that his team could watch to impart their wisdom on him of what to expect. Because when Tyson Fury fought him, there was no boxing footage of him because he never had a fight before in the boxing match anyway. And so he had the benefit, I think, it was a combination of him being in top-notch shape, whereas Fury wasn't, having the ability to have his team or himself scout those 12 rounds for any kind of tendencies, and further, not being lured into a false sense of security. Like maybe Fury was thinking he's an MMA guy, great MMA fighter, but not a boxer. This should be absolutely no problem, and didn't take him seriously. And it was an eye opener when Joshua saw what he did, and you're like, okay, this guy's for real. So I must be at my absolute best physically and mentally. So the tape, the fact that Fury struggled, and the fact that he made Joshua realize that I can't take him lightly because of what he did against Fury. You put them all together, and you get yourself an absolutely supreme performance from Anthony Joshua. And maybe even, I'm not saying Ngannou took it lightly or anything like that, but maybe he was thinking to himself, look, I just had a pretty, again, quote unquote, easy time with Fury. I can do the same thing with Anthony Joshua. And that obviously wasn't the case because that right hand was just as devastating as it could be. And, they exploited what I refer to in terms of Ngannou as rookie mistakes, where he basically, for as long as the fight went, left his left hand just dangling out there in what I called no man's land. Either you have to have it back protecting yourself or use it as an attack. But if you just leave it limp, sort of just out in front of you, somebody can easily, if you're a well-schooled fighter like Joshua, either come over the top or go underneath it, or, you know, do things to, you know, it doesn't do you any good when you have a left hand and you're not doing anything with it. It's just sort of in the middle of nowhere.
As much as these crossover fights are entertaining, especially with the build-up and whatnot, it's again proven that boxing and MMA are completely two different sports. I mean, we've seen boxers go over to that MMA world and get choked out because they don't know how to defend the takedown. And then when the MMA guys come over to the our world, if you want to call it, the boxing world, Dan, they either get knocked out. McGregor, now Ngannou, obviously the Tyson Fury Ngannou fight, that's maybe an
anomaly.
Anomaly, that's it. See, I knew that's why you're a master with the words there, Dan. it's two completely different sports, and I think we saw that on Friday night.
I've known that all along. They are two different sports. For some reason, the public has a fascination with these types of matches. I mean, I don't have anything against them, but I don't get too hyped up about it. I saw it with McGregor and Mayweather. Couldn't have gone any more than the way you thought. The one shocker was because Ngannou was able to perform at such a high level against Fury. And so while I don't take anything away from Ngannou's performance, you know, you have to at least make the point that that was not the optimal Fury. And so Ngannou was able to take advantage of it. But I'll say this also, Andrew, the fact that he got knocked out by Joshua does not in any way diminish what he did against Fury. I mean, both things can be true at the same time. Mm-hmm. He put in a great performance against Tyson Fury. A lot of people thought he won the fight. He knocked the heavyweight champ on his rear end. And then, obviously, in the next fight, he got pulverized by Joshua. But the two don't diminish what happened in the other fight. You know, Joshua should get credit for what he did, and Ngannou should get credit for what he did against Fury.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Fury there. He was ringside for the fight, and he applauded Joshua. But obviously, we don't know what goes inside the Gypsy King's mind. He's got a very, very unique mind. But what do you think Tyson, maybe even Frank Warren, when they saw that Joshua knockout in Ghana within less than two rounds, what's going through Tyson Fury's mind?
Well, the fact that he applauded, I appreciated that. I mean, you got to give it up to him. I mean, he did what Tyson couldn't do. I think Tyson Fury, as a top professional boxer for a long time, heavyweight champ of the world, just because you're at the top doesn't mean you can't appreciate or give credit to somebody that does something good. I know that Joshua has been his rival, so to speak, even though they've not actually met in the ring yet. I mean, that will happen, you know, hopefully in the near future. You know, but at the end of the day, you got to give it up to Anthony Joshua. I don't care if you're a big detractor of Joshua's or you don't like him or you're, you know, anti-Joshua, however you want to describe it. But Tyson Fury, he understands, you know, he's the only other man that knows what it's like to be in a boxing ring in a real fight against Francis Ngannou. And he just saw his great rival absolutely, you know, blew him out. Where, you know, he himself had struggled for 10 rounds and barely was able to eke out a split decision. So I feel like the applause was like, hey, you know what? Tip of the hat to you, Anthony Joshua. You know, you did the job. And, you know, maybe there's some aspect somewhere deep in the recesses of his mind. I think there's this kind of thought in the minds of lots of boxing fans is that after seeing what a lot of people thought of as an embarrassment for the heavyweight champion of the world to basically be beaten, you know, or at least very close to it by an MMA fighter making his professional boxing debut, that Anthony Joshua somehow, you know, brought everybody back to earth and, you know, sort of protected the sanctity of boxing. Like, we're not going to let you interloper from UFC or MMA come into our sport and do what you did a second time in a row against an elite heavyweight. So, you know, maybe it was a little get back and Fury could appreciate that.
Looking at Joshua right now, he seems to be, if you want to say it, back to the old Joshua that we saw in the early part of his career, just knocking everybody out with that big right hand. But he's 34 years old now, Dan, and you've been in the game long enough. You know that heavyweights tend to come into their prime in their sort of mid-30s, early 30s. That's when they come into their peak. But also, Joshua's had four fights, and I think, in a calendar year. So he's had that consistency and that activity that every fighter wants and needs to stay at. Obviously, when they come in at the ring, that ring rust doesn't set in. But what do you think is the factor for Joshua being the way he is right now and getting back to, if you want to call it, the old Joshua? Do you think he's in
his... I think activity is such a huge thing. I commented about it on my own podcast the other night. I have written about it in the past. There is no doubt about it that the fact that Anthony Joshua has now had four fights in 11 months is a huge, huge factor. Now, granted, he has not faced in those four fights in 11 months the elite heavyweights, but that doesn't matter. He's fighting legitimate professional fighters. Say whatever you want about Ngannou, but he is a professional fighter. He's, you know, a UFC former heavyweight champion. He obviously only a few months ago went 10 rounds and knocked down and too many people defeated the heavyweight champion Tyson Fury. So he's fighting solid professionals. Jermaine Franklin, who we defeated in the first fight of this run after the Usyk losses. No joke, solid professional, good fighter. You know, Hellenius, kind of an unusual scenario because of what happened and him taking him on just a few days notice because Dillian White had failed the drug test. But still, Hellenius, you know, has been in with lots of good quality guys. And then you go to Otto Wehling, who was, you know, at his best, you know, was a guy that perhaps could have beaten Tyson Fury because of the terrible cut. But still, I think most unbiased opinions would look at Otto and say, you know, this is a guy that's probably, you know, a top, what, 12 heavyweight or something like that. And he dominated and stopped him. So the thing is, you're fighting good fighters. You're getting the repetition. Anybody that's going to be superb at their craft is going to be better when they have the repetition. I mean, if you only did one interview a year, you know, how good would they be? If I wrote one article a year, how good would they be? You know, but if you're doing it all the time, you know, you're in a groove. So he's in the gym. He's mentally there. He's physically there. He's at his optimal weight. He's learning from his, you know, from Ben Davison, who's now, that was their second fight together. But he also was doing that with Derek James in the previous fight. You're just in that boxing frame of mind. You're making the ring walk. You're getting your hands wrapped. You're getting the instructions. You're under the lights. You're going through the process. You're doing the weigh-in. You're doing the interviews. It's the whole process of just staying active and just going through the, so everything is just like secondhand. It's muscle memory. Mm. And that's what he's been doing. And it's, and by the way, it's not like he's an only example, because you can take a look at the man who pulled the upset on the undercard in Joseph Parker against Zili Zhang, who, another guy that was like his fourth fight in what, or fifth fight in 14 months, something like that. Same deal. Gets knocked out by Joe Joyce. Doesn't just slink off and sit under a rock for a year, year and a half. Got his shit together and came back. And again, not fighting the top guys, but fighting reasonable heavyweights, staying active, and exact same scenario as I just said with Anthony Joshua. Mentally there in the gym, physically near his proper weight, you know, going through the repetition and just keeping active. Obviously, you know, has meshed beautifully with Andy Lee. And even though he got knocked down two times, still had the understanding of how to deal with that. And again, activity is supremely important. And we can go and talk about the guys who it's the opposite. Guys who had, you know, one fight in a long period of time, who got into a big fight and just stunk it out or got blown away. Errol Spence, Stephen Fulton, Deontay Wilder against Joseph Parker had one round in 2 years. And we can go on down the line. It's just, you know, every fighter that doesn't fight for that period, a long period of time, is only doing harm to their own careers. You and I will have other fighters to write and talk about. Fans will have other writers, other fighters to watch and to talk about also. The only ones that this inactivity hurts is the boxer himself.
One final one on Fury and, Fury and Joshua is, they share a common opponent. They share like four common opponents in Dillian White, Kevin Johnson, Wallen and Ngannou. But obviously the last two that Joshua has faced are the common opponents for Tyson Fury. Now, Otto Wallen, you can say, gave Tyson Fury a scare with a cut, a legitimate punch. And Ngannou obviously took him the distance and it was a split decision, like you said. But Joshua's managed to get rid of these guys with relative ease. So I know you're only as good as your last fight, Dan. We know that. Joshua was written off and his mentality was spoken about, that he's not mentally there and he's mentally weak or fragile. But now look at him. So you're only as good as your last fight. But going on these last fights, who's the favorite if Fury and Joshua were to face each other? Who would be the favorite in that fight?
Man, it's very hard to say right now because we still have another big giant hurdle to climb between now and if that fight happens. And that's Usyk, to see what happens between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. But Tyson Fury looked svelte. He looked in good shape. I've seen some of the training videos. He's obviously, no doubt in my mind, taking a fight with Alexander Usyk far more seriously than he took the training preparing for the fight that he had against Ngannou. And so I think, you know, Tyson Fury, when he's at his best, you know, he does very well. Look, he's obviously motivated and in good condition when he had the rematch and the third fight against Deontay Wilder, for example. Look, and just because maybe he didn't perform that well, you know, as a mentally ill-prepared and undertrained going into the fight with Ngannou, And, you know, Joshua was always a guy that's been in great condition when he goes in his fights. You know, nobody can ever really look at him and say, well, he wasn't really, at least mentally or physically prepared for a particular fight. Every fight is different. So, you know, I still think that Fury probably would be a little bit of a favorite against Joshua, just based on a lot of different factors, you know, the height, the reach, you know, the quickness that he has. You know, he doesn't punch maybe the way that Joshua does, but he's a good puncher also. But that's the reason why we all want to see this fight, because you can have intelligent boxing people give you reasons why they feel like Anthony Joshua will win that fight. And certainly people that will do the same and tell you why Tyson Fury can win the fight. That's the big summit meeting in the division. I mean, we'll see what happens with Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. But it strikes me that as we come to the end of this particular era of heavyweights, you know, because these guys are now into their, you know, their mid-30s, not getting any younger. They've all had their, you know, their run near the top or been champions, and they're starting to all fight each other. You know, there's going to come a time where you see like that ultimate summit meeting. It's like what happened with Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. They were the Lennox was still the champion. Mike was still the huge name. All the other guys were sort of had gone by the wayside from that great era of the 90s. You know, George Foreman and Riddick Bowe and Michael Moore and all these guys, they were either done or near the end. And they finally had their fight. That's what it's going to be like when Fury and AJ finally get into the ring. It's going to, you know, be sort of the culmination of this, you know, 2000s, you know, 2010s sort of into the early 2020s era of fighting. And, you know, hopefully that will happen. And it's going to be a huge, huge fight. So you ask who's the favorite? I mean, I can see reasons to pick both guys. But if the AJ that shows up the way that he did against Ngannou, fiercely motivated, focused, in shape, you know, did his homework, has a belief in the trainer, went through a tough camp, you know, he's hard to beat. And Tyson Fury, we've seen he's undefeated. He's hard to beat also. Even on his worst night against Ngannou, he still managed to get the win. So, you know, you kind of got to look at it from that perspective. Also, you can rip Fury all you want about looking like shit in that fight and being not prepared. But at the end, he still won the fight.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now, I want to piggyback on what you said there. Now, you talked about this era. Now, we know when, especially when I was a kid growing up, the U.S. dominated the heavyweight division. You mentioned George Foreman, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali.
Well, Riddick Bowe was American also. I mean, he's our guy.
But you know what I mean? You dominated sort of like the heavyweight scene for so long, but it seems like it's, well, Deontay Wilder aside, because he was WBC heavyweight champion, what's the feeling like in the US right now with sort of like not having a US heavyweight or heavyweights plural that is in the mix with all these guys, the Joshuas, the Tyson Furies, the Usyks? What's the feeling like in the US?
I mean, I can't speak for my whole country, but the fact is we haven't had the dominating heavyweights in terms of the volume of heavyweights for quite a while. I mean, I can remember back, you know, there was like a huge thing back. Remember when Klitschko's were at the top and you had Oleg Maskayev was a contender and Nikolai Valuev was a contender. You had David Hay was one of the top heavyweights. So there was a period of time where and Hasim Rockman was like an American standout, had beaten Lennox Lewis and was involved in some big fights. You had John Ruiz was around. Holyfield was still going. James Toney was trying to make it a go at the heavyweight division. But there was a period where you had Eastern Europeans or, you know, fighters from the former Soviet countries who had three of the four titles. And the fight took place, the rematch between Oleg Maskiev and Hasim Rockman. Had the WBC title at that time. It was in Las Vegas. This was their rematch. And I remember they created the tagline for the fight, like, because it was a pay-per-view. They called it America's last line of defense, meaning he's the last American heavyweight champion. And then Oleg Maskiev knocked him out late in that fight. I was there, and it was sort of like, it was actually a pretty darn good fight, but he got knocked out. And
he knocked him through the ropes. Is that right?
That's the first fight.
Yeah, that's the first fight.
This is the rematch.
Oh, the rematch.
You know, several years later. So he wins the WBC title, and that was the first time in, like, forever, really, that there hadn't been an American with one of the heavyweight belts, you know, other than, let's say, for the time period before Lennox vacated and retired, with his different belts that he held and or was considered the recognized champion. So this is not a new phenomenon, is my point, that it's a worldwide sport. There's not as many American heavyweights. If there are a good athlete in the United States, they're oftentimes pursuing other sports such as football or basketball or baseball, whatever. There's a lot of great heavyweights around the world. This is an underrated heavyweight era because it's not just, we have Deontay Wilder, there's Andy Ruiz, there's others, but as you mentioned, there's Usyk, and there's obviously the Brits with the Fury and Joshua. If you want to go further down the list, Dillian White has been a top contender for a long time. Joseph Parker is from New Zealand. Zhang is from China. So it's a worldwide sport. I never really get too focused on the nationality of the fighters. You, as an American, I guess you'd like to see your guys win the fights, but I never really thought about things like that. I mean, to me, I really don't care. I wanted to see the best fight, the best, whatever country they're from.
Well, this is a nice segue into this one here. Mike Tyson. We spoke about him. You know where I'm going. Where I'm going. Mike Tyson. Now, a hero of mine growing up when I was a kid, when I was in the boxing gyms as a young kid trying to be a boxer. He's fighting at 58 years old against Jake Paul. Now, I don't know what you've heard. Have you heard anything, Dan, in reference to it being an exhibition, the size of the gloves, how many rounds? But if you haven't heard anything like that, just give me your initial thoughts when you saw that sort of head-to-head and that fight poster.
I mean, I was surprised at the moment I saw it just because it was being announced. But in the long run, I wasn't shocked because that seemed like that was the logical, if you're going to continue down the path of making these types of crossover celebrity, whatever, however you want to call it, what would be bigger than Mike Tyson against Jake Paul at this point? And if you go back to 2020, when Mike had the exhibition match against Roy Jones, which did a huge amount of pay-per-view business, mainly because it was, two legendary names, and also it didn't hurt the sales because, here in America, we're all in a pandemic and everything is closed and no one's going anywhere. You can't, do anything. Everybody was at home. Everybody bought the fight. In fact, when they fought the fight in Los Angeles, there was nobody in the arena because they weren't allowed to have a crowd. But on that undercard, you had Jake Paul in his second professional fight scoring a spectacular knockout where the clip of the video of that knockout against Nate Robinson, the former NBA player, was everywhere, viral on the internet. Just a sick knockout. Though to think that they're here now 4 years later, as Jake has made a bigger name for himself in boxing, had some more significant fights against, former MMA fighters, but also actual boxing matches against Tommy Fury and the last couple of opponents that he has had. And Tyson is still the most famous boxer who ever lived in the history of the sport, other than maybe Muhammad Ali. I can't say I'm totally shocked. I asked, what is the ruling going to be in terms of gloves and ring and real fight, exhibition fight, headgear, et cetera, rounds? Well, when MVP and Netflix announced this event, they did not announce any of that stuff. I reached out to the PR team. I reached out to Nikisa Bedarian, who is the partner of Jake Paul and his promotion company that, runs most of the business side of things, and asked those questions. And they didn't. The PR team still hasn't responded even nicely to say, we don't want to talk about it, whatever. Nikisa and I had a text exchange, and they're not ready to put that out yet. What that tells me is either A, it's not decided, or B, they just don't want to talk about it just yet. But I made my phone calls to the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, which is the folks that will oversee the event because they handle all combat events in the state of Texas, where I've covered many fights and know people that work for that agency. And I called up one of the guys I know there, and I was like, hey, what's the deal with this thing? And he said to me, that he knew about the Jake Paul Tyson match only because he had seen it in the media. But in terms of anything official, the only thing that had been done was MVP had put in a date request with the department to secure the date to hold a boxing event at the AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, which is right outside of Dallas. A huge stadium. It's where Canelo Alvarez fought Billy Joe Saunders, and they set the all-time American attendance indoor record when they had their unification fight. Over 76,000 people. It was a wild scene being down there for that as the pandemic was finally subsiding. So they don't have any knowledge in terms of anything official that that's the match they're asking for. And so what does that tell you? That tells you that there has been no effort, at least officially, in Texas for Tyson to get a boxing license, which would lead you to believe that it probably would be an exhibition unless they try to go forward to, at this point, get him licensed. Now, one thing to remember, and again, this was said to me by this person involved in that agency, is that in the state of Texas, the promoter of the boxing event or an MMA event or whatever it is, doesn't have to let the commission know up until at least 21 days ahead of time what their proposed fights are. So they have plenty of time to go through the process. But it just feels like it would be hard for me to see them do a real fight between a soon-to-be 58-year-old Iron Mike Tyson and a prime, physically strong young man, 27 years old, Jake Paul. You know, Tyson, people remember him when he was great. In the mid to late 80s, when he was the king of the world and he was knocking everybody out and he became, you know, what he became. The Tyson I remember, besides that Tyson, is the Tyson I covered in the early days of my professional boxing writing career, of covering his fights near the end of his career and watching him quit and watching it knock the fuck out and basically performing the way an old, you know, unmotivated shot fighter would perform. That's the Tyson I remember. And when you are that age back in 2005, 2004, 2003, whatever, it's not going to get better with age. Now, as a 57-year-old going on 58, Mike is obviously in superb condition. And you can watch the little 10-second clips they put out of him hitting miss on the videos that they put on social media. And I'm glad for Mike that he's doing well and he's in that kind of frame of mind. But there's a big difference between having a 15 or 20-second video clip on Twitter compared to actually being in a boxing ring for 3 minutes and having a 27-year-old strong man with a big right hand coming at you trying to knock you out. Mm. And you're gassed after a minute. So, I'm not hating on the event. I'm sort of intrigued by the event. I'm going to probably go to Texas to cover the event. But I believe it's going to wind up being an exhibition fight. I just cannot wrap my mind around the fact that Texas is going to regulate this as an actual official boxing match that would go on the records of these two men. They wouldn't allow it on the records when Roy Jones and Mike fought, and they were both in the same age group. Mm. That was an exhibition match. So we'll see what they do. I'm thrilled that Netflix is involved, though, because that's a huge platform. Everybody's going to watch this. I mean, we had television programs in the mainstream that were talking about the fight over the weekend when it was made. And so it's going to be a popular event. It's not pay-per-view. If you have Netflix, which millions and millions of people have, you just call it up and watch it the same you'd watch, you know, whatever your favorite show is on Netflix. So that's a benefit. And there's going to be, I'm assuming, undercard fights. So the guys and gals that fight on that show will get some exposure on a massive platform. So, you know, it's okay. But I just don't see it being a real fight, Andrew.
I was out in Riyadh, like we just spoke about. Now, there was two fighters out there, Dan. This fight probably won't be an exhibition, but I'll get your thoughts on it. Manny Pacquiao and Conor Benn, they tried to do it a head-to-head. They were out there together. There was whispers around all the media guys saying that they were going to do a head-to-head, and it was all planned, and this fight looks like it's happening and whatnot. And I spoke to Sean Gibbons, Pacquiao's manager, and he says we're 99% that this fight will happen. Well, that's only 1% left, whatever that 1% is. I don't know what it is. But yeah, this fight probably won't be an exhibition. But your thoughts? No.
Yeah, it would be an exhibition. But, you know, listen, God bless Sean, my man. Everybody, Sean included, knows that in any boxing deal, in any deal, frankly, 99% doesn't mean shit, because that last 1% is all that matters. So until it's 100%, it doesn't mean anything. But I think his point is they're probably far down the road. You know, to me, the end result is merely a matter of do the Saudis, you know, including Turki al-Sheikh, who runs the program there and makes those decisions about what to get behind in terms of financially and how much they want to spend. If he wants to see the fight, he'll buy the fight and the fight will happen. If he doesn't, then it won't happen. One thing is for sure is when they do want to see a fight, you know, they don't nickel and dime everybody. They pay a lot of money for the events and they put up certainly a fair and sometimes overly fair amount of money to put the event together. So it's not like, I don't believe this will be the case. Not like, you know, they'll say, we'll give you $10 million for the fight, but they need $30 million for the fight, whatever the numbers are. So if he wants to fight, we'll see it. If they don't, then we won't see it. But I think that if it does happen, obviously it's a real fight. Pacquiao, you know, he's not Tyson. He's 45 or fine, but he's, you know, he's only a couple of years into retirement. He's never really wanted to retire. When he lost his last fight against Jordanes Ugas, yeah, he lost the decision. He didn't get beat up, you know, and the retirement was in many ways, I'm not saying I didn't believe he was retiring, but it was all based on the fact that he was running for, he was going to announce his candidacy to run for president of the Philippines. And obviously, if you're running for the president of your country, it's hard to do that if your constituents, if the citizens think you're going to be doing professional boxing matches at the same time. Mm-hmm. So he retired from boxing. He lost his election. He didn't run for a re-election in the Senate, so his term expired. So he's no longer an active politician that has an actual job in the government. And, you know, boxing has been Manny's life, and it's a place where he can do a lot of stuff and still make money. And the question is, how big of money can he make? And this seemed like a reasonable fight. He was looking for any fight. It didn't matter if it was Conor Benn or anybody that was a good name that could put him in a lucrative situation. And with all the money available in Saudi Arabia, Conor Benn being unable to fight in the United Kingdom at this point, having had two fights in America, but obviously not against big names or big money, relatively speaking, it kind of makes sense. So again, I don't love the fight. I don't hate the fight. If Pacquiao has to fight as a pro once again, it seems like a reasonable matchup. I think Manny is also probably disappointed because his ability or his application to try to fight in the upcoming Summer Olympic Games was rejected by the folks that run the tournament in the boxing part of the Olympics because he was beyond the age limit, which is now 40. He's now 45. The Filipino folks try to get them to give an exception or to change the rule. They wouldn't do it. So Pacquiao is no longer has the possibility of competing for his country. He wants to have a fight. And so this is what he's looking to do.
One last one, because I think we've got 7 minutes on this call left, Dan. Now, we broke the news on our Instagram, IFL, that Terence Crawford and Chris Eubank Jr. looks like it might happen in July. They're both with BOMAC, so I don't understand how that will play out. I don't know if BOMAC can split himself in two and be in both corners. It'll be quite difficult. But Terence Crawford, like we spoke about last time, is in this sort of limbo land where who's left for him to fight? I mean,
no, this is
does Chris Eubank Jr. make sense right now?
I mean, as much as anybody else, I guess. I mean, he doesn't have – that's the thing about Crawford. First of all, as it relates to Brian McIntyre, if that fight does happen, and I don't think it's, like, done yet, but I'm told that they're talking about it, clearly BOMAC is going to be with Terence Crawford. I mean, he's been with him his entire career, I mean, since day one. And he's only been with Eubank for the one fight. Now, he did a great job with him, obviously, in helping him to the victory in the rematch against Liam Smith. But clearly Crawford is his guy, and I'm sure Eubank understands that. He's wiped out the welterweights. The one welterweight that would be a legitimate fight in my mind would be a Jaron Ennis, but that's not a commercially big-time fight. He doesn't really need to worry about that. 154, you know, there's Tim Zhu if he beats Thurman. That's obviously, to me, that's a really outstanding matchup. Charlo is not fighting right now. He's on the shelf. He hasn't fought in the division in a while. There's really not any other huge names in the weight class. 160 in terms of the champions is not a big names out there. Eubank is a guy that can go between 168 and 160. He does have a little bit of a name, you know, and again, is it a huge fight? And I don't think it's a huge mega pay-per-view or anything like that. It's all about, you know, what can Crawford get? And, you know, there'll be some intrigue because he will have to move up a couple of weight divisions to do his business. I'm not opposed to the fight, but it doesn't make me like say, oh my God, I have to see that. To me, it's just another fight, you know?
Mm. Do you think Crawford's doing this to cement himself as a 160 or 168 pounder? Because like we said last time we spoke, it makes the Canelo fight is probably for the commercial side of things and to get the casual boxing fans or just the fan that doesn't even know about boxing to get him intrigued.
I just think he's looking for a fight.
What's that, sorry?
I just think he's looking for a fight. I don't think there's any sort of like master plan. I think he just
set himself up at 160 or 168 so he can get the Canelo fight somewhere down the line. Or,
well, he doesn't need to fight Eubank to get a Canelo fight necessarily. I mean,
right, okay.
Canelo, if Canelo wants to fight Terence Crawford, he can fight Terence Crawford. It's not based on you know, if he beats Chris Eubank or anything like that. And I doubt that a Chris Eubank fight would be at 168. Presumably it'd be a middleweight fight if it happens. But I think there's still a bit to go before that becomes a reality. Like I said, listen, I want to see Terrence Crawford back in the boxing ring. I'd hate to see a fighter that is so good and is coming off such a big win and is usually in a crowd-pleasing kind of fight and is, you know, very talented, undefeated, and everything you have he has going for him, to have to have, you know, an unnecessarily long layoff. I mean, even if it's July, it's still going to be a year since the fight that he had with Errol Spence. And, you know, obviously he has a certain amount of money he wants to make, I'm assuming. And look, he's 40-0. I want to see him see what he can do before the end of his career. And he's the kind of fighter where you haven't seen slippage. He still is, you know, he still looked as good and sharp against an Errol Spence as he looked back when he was, you know, maybe better than when he was winning title, you know, in the lightweight division. So, you know, I'd hope that Crawford can, you know, use this part of his career where he's at the top to make the biggest fights and the most money and the biggest events.
Well, Dan, the boxing world never ceases to amaze us, does it? With all these crazy fights that are lined up. So there's going to be plenty to talk about. No doubt something will break this week and I'll get you back up on Sunday and we'll do it all over again. We'll talk about how crazy this sport is. But as always, my friend, I always appreciate your time and you jumping on and speaking to me. And yeah, I hope you have a great day. And thanks again, Dan.
Anytime.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.